And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another edition of the Daily Dots. And joined, as always, by the Brain Trust himself, Mr. Chase Taylor. And looking at the, a pretty non-eventful day, I would say, overall. Pretty much everything was flat. I mean, NASDAQ finished up like 0.1 or something like that.
S&P was literally flat, 0.02. Qs were up 0.34, but already, you know, down almost 1% after hours, thanks to Meta. IWM down 0.4, Mag 7 up 1, but now down 2 after hours. So, especially when you throw in after hours, yeah, just pretty flat.
Hey, the Tesla one was pretty funny. You know, you don't want to celebrate too quick, but boy, we had that one pinned. I got to give you the majority of the credit for that one.
Yeah, well, we got out of the way of that one, but then we decided to add a little Meta before earnings today. So we giveth and then we taketh away with the two.
Well, yeah, but
small earnings moves.
Okay, well, hold on. But to be fair, we added like 90 bips to Meta.
Yeah.
And quite honestly,
I would still like to have them back.
Yeah, I would too. But I don't regret, like, I am a firm believer in the longer run. It's not going to be anything we regret. Yeah. And quite honestly, if it sells off more, I'm going to buy more. I cannot help but laughing.
One of them is growing at 30%. And one of those two is losing at 12%.
Well, and one of them is trading at 30 times earnings. The other one's trading at 45. The disaster quarter from Tesla, off again another vaporware, non-existent promise from Musk, rallies 12%, just like we thought it would. And that same market slams down Meta, who it was still mid-20s on revenue growth.
I mean, all the numbers were fantastic.
They blew it out.
People just didn't like where they think revenue will go, mostly.
This is one of the fascinating things about this market to me. It's how idiosyncratic it's gotten.
Yeah.
Meaning, and it's not even idiosyncratic in a way that you can observe and anticipate. It's just like, hey, we're going to hold this company to completely different standards. We're going to look past all of the – it makes no sense. I've never seen a market that has less uniformity when it comes to valuations and multiples and what they assign high multiples to, in the face of the fact that and it's not even disagreeing in the short run, right? It's sitting there watching this over and over and over, watching these stocks that have traded at these high multiples – while their growth rates have just deteriorated. It's just the strain. You know what I mean? Like what it feels like to me is that we just bet on the wrong horse. You know what I mean? Like with so many of these companies, it's like, well, that's why picking stocks is hard, young guy. And then you're like, well, yeah, but the underlying thesis has played out in both. And yet the market still likes this one more. Right. Like, for instance, I'm not saying Tesla's done. I don't think they're done. I'm not saying any of that. But why in the world that quarter would excite you to run in there and push that thing up 12 or 13%? I literally, like you and I were talking, had you shown us Tesla's numbers before the close,
yeah,
I would have gone, it's down another 5 to 10 in after hours.
If they hadn't promised the affordable car, I think it would have been down 10%.
They've still promised FSD.
No.
I just can't understand the way people value these things. It really is incredible. And I don't really know why that is. I think some people, you could sit there and say, this is what a market in zero gravity looks like, just because nothing matters because so much cash is being pumped into it. But it's crazy to the point where even if you knew the earnings numbers before, it doesn't make any sense. I wish I had something more profound to put on the back of it or some conclusions to come to. I just don't have any conclusions. I will say this, though. I think that when you're navigating a market like this, the temptation is then to throw the fundamental side out of the window because it feels like it doesn't matter. It does. Over the longer run, you got to stay patient. You know, I think that's always been a part of markets, but I think it's especially true in this market. And as much as I hate to say this, it is also, in my opinion, proof of if you want to really outperform, you're going to have to embrace underperforming over short periods. Like you just
It's literally the costume business. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think it's ever been more true in this market. Why? Because even when the fundamentals turn around and come on your side, and even if you're proven 100% right, the market may not care.
Yeah.
And people are like, that's the way it's always been. No, not the way it's always been. Right. Like the fundamentals turn around, things start going. There's so much of that popularity contest that is still a part of the way stuff is trading. You know,
I think this is why I've always been drawn to like commodity futures is when something changes fundamentally, like they care.
Yeah.
And they react and they make sense.
Well, you and I have talked about this with bonds and rates too. Like my success rate on bonds or interest rate related trades is probably at least in the first 30 to 60 days. My success rate on bonds or interest rate related plays is probably double what it is on stocks in this environment.
Right.
Just because there isn't, you know, no one's going to step in there to buy the 10-year because they're like, we believe in Yellen. You know what I mean? Right? We think it's undervalued. Musk continues to be a complicated guy for me.
He's the ultimate complicated guy.
Yeah. There's certain things I applaud him for. And then it still is confounding to me what his shareholder base will look past. I watched a really funny interview. And I don't know either one of these guys personally. My peripheral view of them has always been that I think both of them are extraordinarily intellectual lightweights. But Dan Ives and Ross Gerber on the same did you see that interview?
I did not.
Talking about Tesla's quarter. Listening to them talk about Tesla was hilarious. It was hilarious. Like they both sat there and talked as if AI driven robotics were just to be baked into the cake right now. That, of course, new, like all of this was sensible. Like literally they were talking as if Musk has been an oracle that everything he's ever promised shows up. And you sit there and go, guys, the reasons you were all advocating to buy this stock 5 years ago still haven't materialized.
Yeah, exactly.
And
there's been a couple of people that have like built out like a spreadsheet of all the crazy promises he's made that are all just completely absurd now. And it's a very large spreadsheet and it is comical to look at.
But it does make it a playable stock, which is exactly why you and I, we trimmed the vast majority of that short position going into earnings. And that's why, just because we were like, hey, when Musk is backed into a corner and he's coming off really nasty performance, he's going to come out offering vaporware and making comments, and he's going to talk about AI.
Right.
And that's exactly what he did.
Yep.
And gets the stock to bounce 12%.
Which for him is billions of dollars. So
I don't know, but it's losing impetus, right? Like that thing didn't trade today like it had on previous. I'm still a believer within a week or two, it'll be trading below where it entered.
Yeah. And it went,
I could be wrong.
And it went on the chart, it went right back up to the old like waterfall level where like the level that was a bunch of support that turned into, you know, probably resistance now. So technically speaking, it did exactly what I wanted it to do. You go up to the spot where you want to hit it and it failed there so far.
Well, and here's how stupid the logic is behind the whole thing. You made a really funny comment. Was that today or yesterday when we were talking about it? Talking about the promise of the cheaper car, and you were like, I thought that was the Model 3.
I vividly remember that being the pitch on the Model
3. Yeah, the $29,000 Model 3, right? Or right. $25,000, whatever it
Next
was.
Next thing you knew, it migrated up.
To $45,000. Right. Was like the base one.
So now this is the cheap car, because the last cheap car wasn't cheap.
Yeah, well, it's going to be the Model 4, right? Or whatever. I mean, who knows what the model is. But yeah, they buy it. They soak it up. Like as if Tesla trading at 45 times earnings, that car isn't baked into the cake. That non-existent vaporware car that doesn't exist isn't, it's already baked. Everything's baked into the bloody cake there.
Right.
You know, and my simple attitude toward Tesla longs and Tesla shareholders has always been, if you want to make the argument that you're not an automobile company, you got to show me a revenue stream greater than 5% of your overall revenue that doesn't correlate directly to automobile sales.
Yeah, that whole thing's just painfully absurd.
Well, and you heard what Huawei said too. They were like, yeah, we came over and met minds with Tesla and wanted to check out their FSD. And they're like, we're definitely the leader in FSD is what Huawei said. It was kind of a punch. It was kind of a punch to the jaw, but we've all known that. That's another amazing. Have you ever gotten a conversation with Tesla longs about the FSD topic?
I don't do that on purpose.
I don't anymore. I've learned my lesson, but, If
how long ago? I mean, you could have been having that debate 7 years ago. So
well, no, and they'll be like, well, they're the leader in FSD, and you look at them and go, that's just not true. It's not about an opinion. Here are the leaders in FSD. Tesla's last on the list by every metric you want to look at. And it's the most astounding thing because you just show them the proof. They're like, yeah, it's not true. And you're okay, right? Anyway, funny to watch that whole thing play out. What else do we see today? Rates.
Speaking of, it's worth noting that Mussie didn't clarify whether the lower cost EV would be a brand new model or a simplified version of current models. So there's an asterisk on even what we're talking about.
The one thing I will say though for Tesla and Musk,
not that I wanted to keep going here, but
no, as a shareholder, I would appreciate having a CEO that's constantly pushing the price of the stock as much as he is.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a weird, vapid thing to say, but like for, you know, if I was a Tesla long, I'd appreciate the fact that he just gave me an extra 12% on nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess there's that.
He's in the Hall of Fame for stock pumping. There's no doubt about it.
Oh man, that dude's got it down to a science. What else do we see today? Rates, pretty serene. Rates went up a little.
So yeah, that's something I did want to mention. On the back end, at one point we're up like 6 basis points on the like 2030. Closed the day more like 5, but it was interesting because it was on essentially no data. The Fed's in the blackout period, so they're not talking. So it just that's not a huge day, but for a day of no kind of clear driver to be up 6 basis points on a long end, that was interesting to me. And then you realize dollar yen hits 155, which is kind of an area where there's been speculation the BOJ might, or not really the BOJ, but the finance ministry might jump in Japan and kind of defend the yen. So we hit 155, and next thing you knew, like long end treasuries kind of backed up, made me think that it's at least possible that Japan was out selling some treasuries in order to defend the yen there. Not in size by any means, but the whole thing just was interesting to have pretty decent move on no news or data at the same time that the yen hit 155.
Now the BOJ is trying to defend the yen after spending the last 35 years trying to deteriorate it or push it down.
I mean,
why? I thought this is what they wanted. Why? I mean, they should be in manufacturing nirvana right now.
And they are. And I do think on some level they want it. It's very, very helpful for them, you know, vis-a-vis China when it comes to exporting stuff. I think they don't want it to go fast.
Yeah, it's all about the rate of change. Yeah. Yeah.
And at some point, the inflation on their end becomes possibly bad enough to where it you know, this whole thing reverses, where it's not cute anymore to have the currency devaluation.
I know, but I see, but then I would think that I just don't – I have a hard time imagining that play out because – if the currency drops low enough, manufacturing is going to – I mean, can you imagine having my own experience with this in relationship to companies that I'm on the board of and things like that, I would jump at the opportunity to move a manufacturing base from China to Japan if the costs were similar.
And the problem is there. I mean, there's not – you don't have any workers. Like,
that's true.
They're already kind of tapped out. Like unemployment's like 1%. In Japan, they're already beefing up, you know, the amount of people that they bring in to do guest working and stuff, which they used to be very against. And demographic realities have led them to be more open to having migrants come in to do work and stuff. But I don't think they have the capacity to take on, you know, any sort of significant offshoring to Japan. Just based on there's not enough people and it's already so tight, but
you don't
the manufacturing
need
capacity they do have gets way more competitive.
But you don't need people. You buy a bunch of Tesla AI
robots. To
be
fair, they truly are the robotic leaders of the world. So they have been. That's not wrong. Yeah,
they have been for 40 years.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, they've been leading that charge.
Maybe the only people that could see their demographics coming, apparently.
Yeah. Other places are more of a – I have a hard time not seeing the Japanese economy take advantage of a weaker yen as opposed to literally letting – the other advantage they have is just cultural cohesiveness there. They're not going to rip themselves apart because the currency takes a dip. You know what I mean?
Or anything, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, that culture can button things up and endure any storm. Kind of German-esque in that way.
True.
You know? Yep. What else do we see out there today that was interesting? I'm trying to think. Gold, so, kind of uneventful as of late. Yeah,
and on the chart, it kind of we got up to a point where you would kind of hope it would grab onto it and stick, and it just got rejected by it. So not a good looking chart at the moment, but we haven't even retraced a fourth of the move higher, so it might still have good ways to go down.
Miners, I will say this. Now, look.
Decent today, but after hours, they already kind of let go.
But what I'm saying is that in a healthy market like this, after watching the – or excuse me, in a healthy – if this was a healthy gold bull market and you see gold get hit like it did, right, I would expect the miners to sell off. And then if gold just kind of sits there and bides its time, I would expect the miners to hang in there or slightly advance a little bit.
They should.
Yeah, they have a little bit. I think they're actually looking a little healthier, especially the fact that GDX is hung above that 3187 line.
Yeah.
But that one is really – that to me, that's a really simple trade. You know, if you're above 3187 on GDX, stay at the party. Minute you break that line, get the heck out of there.
Reassess later.
Yeah, and you can always put it back on.
Yeah.
That's my feeling on that.
One thing I wanted to note was kind of more of a yesterday story, but I missed part of it, and that is new home sales, which we talked about yesterday. They were good. But more importantly, new home supply. I didn't realize this, and I looked at it this morning, but the supply of new homes is the highest since 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you look at – go back to like 2000, the last quarter century, really only that like 07, 08 area where did you have more new homes for sale. That – We constantly are barraged with the housing shortage narrative, and we do have a shortage of existing homes that are listed for sale, obviously. But other than that, new homes are 477,000 new homes for sale right now.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up because I continue to hear Dave Ramsey, who I have a lot of respect for. I continue to hear he and his ilk keep pounding on this undersupply. Guys.
Highest since 08.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but it is, they are just 100% wrong. If you quit listening to the anecdotes, which that's the only thing that backs up what they're saying, and you look at the hard data, which you pulled up on Bloomberg, it's not true. There is like you said, there's a shortage of homes for sale. There's not a shortage of houses in existence. Yeah. So here's what everybody needs to be conscious of. What you have is a scenario that we refer to as shadow inventory. And shadow inventory can become inventory in a hurry. Okay, so if you don't think, if you're believing the Dave Ramsey, housing is rock steady and it can't go down, well, first of all, he said that a year and a half ago and houses are down about 15% since he said that. Right? Aren't we down about 12 to 15 on average?
I don't think so. I think you're pretty flat over the last year.
Well, I'm talking over the last... It's really since the end of 2022. So last almost two years.
I still don't think so. I think you're pretty flat. We have to look. And it depends on where you're at. There are markets where, yes.
Yeah, no, I thought so that...
In our market, maybe yes.
Well, I was reading somewhere that if you go from the absolute peak of 2022, that average home sales or price of average home sales is down. We'll look into that. We'll give you a read on that tomorrow.
Median new home sales, things like that. Yeah, those are pretty the median new home price is pretty rough. If you just take all the homes and look at the price, I don't think it's near as bad.
Okay. Well, and the other thing to be fair is that even if that's correct, 12 to 15% from the high, you had such a short-lived spike in median home prices in 2020. I mean, they were going up since the end of COVID, but then you had that like kind of parabolic blow off.
Yeah, the insanity
in 2022. Right. So what I'm talking about is from that absolute peak level. But anyway, we'll check into that data and get you to it. I think it's a little worse than you do. The truth's probably somewhere in the middle. Or you're going to be right and I'm going to be wrong.
Or it just depends on which way you look at it. There's so many different ways. It sounds dumb to say that, but there are a million ways to look at home prices.
Well, yeah, like you and I have talked about before, median home prices don't tell the story anymore because traditionally jumbo mortgages or jumbo sized mortgages make up about 15 to 20% of the mix of houses that sell. And then when you look at this market, I know at one point, and I don't know where it is right now, but I know at one point it was like jumbo size homes were making up like 45 to 50% of the mix.
Yeah.
You know, cause it was cash buyers.
So speaking of the another breakdown I just saw today was luxury versus non-luxury. So this is an interesting stat. Luxury supply is absolutely flying higher. So you're getting tons of luxury homes hit the market, but luxury is also the only ones that has like big price gains. So right now luxury homes are like the price gains are pretty big. Whereas like non-luxury, I don't even know what these define as, but like those are like pretty rough on the appreciation side.
Well, I think
how is that a thing, you know, to have the supply flying higher and then, but you also have the prices.
Well, I would say give it time. Again, yeah, I think it's course, these data anomalies. And I think the majority of that is from California. These people fleeing that mansion tax that they put on. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I'm not sure where the level starts. But there's a certain – you get over a certain price of house in California, and they're hitting you with an extra tax.
It's all right. They'll pay you $20 to work at Burger King. So you can just pay your tax by going and getting a Burger King job.
Yeah, flipping burgers, man. That's the new path to prosperity.
That is two times what I did manual labor for in college. I know I sound like an old guy here now, but
no, it's double. I got paid. I got paid $9.50 to work in an electrical supply or warehouse and drive a little delivery truck around. I had to load it. And, you know, it wasn't a bad job.
Yeah.
And I actually thought $9.50 was pretty good coin back then.
Yeah, when I was in college, I was doing $10 an hour at Astro World at Six Flags. Hard work. It was like leaf blowing and stuff like that. You know, like this is hard day's work.
Yeah.
But I was happy to have that $10 an hour. So
I wonder.
I think I could have got $20 to.
I think the
fry machine.
Worst job I ever had was hanging. We had to reinstall. The pipe, the sprinkler system for an office building.
No, thank you.
And we had to do it at night.
Yeah, right? My brother used to do that for a little
graveyard.
Yeah.
And I, of course, was the lowest guy on the totem pole. So my job was to carry burlap sacks full of pipe and pipe parts to the guys. And so up and downstairs, that's all I did was just pack pipe and pack it. I didn't last long. I started calling in sick a lot, and then they gently let me off the hook.
Yeah.
I just started dating my wife at that time. So I'd be on my way to work at 6 p.m. because it's, you know, and she'd call and be like, hey, want to go see a movie? And I'd be like, yes. I'd just call in sick. I couldn't stand that job. God bless those people for giving it to me. It was a very nice guy.
Speaking of, when I had that Six Flags job, same thing. It was overnight, but it was weather dependent. If the park got rained out, you didn't have to come in that night.
And you're
like
praying for rain.
We did like the grounds cleaning, right? And in Houston, like weather can be really volatile. Like, you get pop-up thunderstorms in the summer. So I would look at the weather and it'd be like, oh, it's raining. Like 100% it's raining. So I'm making plans. And then it just all just vanishes. So like call the boss. Like, hey, we're not working today, right? Like I saw the weather was crazy. And they're like, oh, we are. I'm like,
you know, like I'm burning up.
Yeah.
I'm burning up. I mean, you don't even want to be close to
it. Happened to me a couple times where I got fired up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then nope.
Yeah. Okay. What else do we have? I'm trying to.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to talk about was China, because they have this interesting quandary of pump liquidity or defend the currency, because you can't do both.
Right.
Because they cancel each other out, which I've kind of found interesting. And Chinese liquidity is a big, big part of global liquidity. So if they stop inserting liquidity to defend their currency, like, asset prices around the world will take note of that. And here in the last, call it month, they've had to kind of defend the currency a little bit with the dollar getting, you know, strong. So if the dollar is going to keep going, like if U.S. data keeps staying pretty strong, And if China wants to keep their currency where it's at, they will probably withdraw liquidity or, you know, hey, let the currency go down another peg. But so that's going to be something kind of fun to watch and interesting to watch moving forward, and will impact all markets more than I think people are going to be ready for.
Yeah, no, I can see that coming. You know, I saw an odd announcement today, and I think it pertains to the show. Just we're talking all things finance, economics, and any politics that involve that, right? Did you see Biden's new cap gains proposal?
I did not.
Very odd to me that he would launch that in an election year, but also very concerning.
What was it?
He was saying that for people that make over $1 million a year, married couples, if you're filing singly, but married couples, it's $1 million. If you're over $1 million
in taxable income,
your new tech cap gains bracket would be 44%. And it really launches an interesting quandary that I've long thought was just an eventuality that we'd have to have this conversation in this country eventually. I think the current tax policy in the United States on typical, as a guy that runs a small business, I think it's already pretty onerous. But I also don't think, and I pay a stupid amount of taxes, but I also don't think it's horrifically unfair. Would I like my tax rate to be smaller? Yes, of course, we all would. That being said, I can stomach it. But when you tell me you're going to take, without taking any risk, that you get a cut of 40% of my profits on an annual basis, and then you're taking half of the whole bloody thing once I sell it, well, at a certain point, it calls into question ownership, right? As a small business owner at that point, do you even own your business? I don't think you do, right? The whole idea of entrepreneurship is that you get the payoff. You take the risk, you get the payoff. Well, it's really hard to paint the picture that without taking any risk, the government gets 40% of the profit, and now they're going to get half of the whole the minute you sell it. Like, how is it not? I mean, talk about something, in my opinion, that would be a disaster of a policy in an economy that is already suffering the ills of consolidation in every sector, right? You're disincentivizing entrepreneurship. You really are. There's no other way to paint it. And you're also incentivizing further consolidation in businesses.
And more, you know, people having to spend more time strategizing on defeating that, because most people can avoid $1 million in taxable income.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I would say it's just a political move, right? You put it $1 million because you're like, no one's going to speak out against it because it's just for millionaires, which is true.
I know, but it's not the way. This is the thing about tax policy that people don't understand. Okay. If people looked at my annual income, it would probably be considered, I don't know, what's the right word? Obscene, right?
But taxable,
right,
is probably significantly lower than headline, right?
Well, it is. And then there's also operating capital. Like I was explaining to my kids, unlike a job at a company that I know is going to be there 5 years from now, even after I pay taxes, I save and put aside probably 65% of our after tax. Why? Because I've got a business to run. I can't spend that money. You know what I mean? And it gets taxed as personal income because as a small business owner, I don't have a 20% corporate tax rate like everybody else does.
Yeah.
It's personal income tax.
Yeah.
Right?
Plus the whole getting double taxed on payroll taxes. And
yeah. I get the whole culture war aspect of why a guy like Biden would want to propose that. But at the same time, I'd be looking at, like, put all the stuff aside about dementia and all this kind of stuff or whatever. I would just look at a guy like Biden and go, you realize you're disincentivizing the American dream? You're making it substantially more risky for somebody to start a business. That's the opposite of what you want to be doing right now. You want to make some money and you want to do something that's good for corporate America? Put a 45% tax on stock buybacks or something like that, right? Address what the real issue is. The issue in this country is not that small business owners are making too much money when they sell their business, right?
Yeah.
It's that there aren't enough small business owners.
So I think that is a perfect argument against it, the small business angle. But I think what they would try to paint this as is like, no, this is just for like, you know, people worth millions and millions and millions or billions of dollars, you know, that are getting capital gains just on their investments every year. Like just straight up, like they sold, you know, a bunch of their Microsoft shares and they're going to pay back now. Because as soon as if you're the guy that runs the donut shops, you know, around town, like if he wanted to sell two of those, you know, now all of a sudden he has to give you half the money. Like,
and maybe they'll include language like that. I will say in the state of Washington,
it would get diluted like crazy, you know, in Congress, obviously.
Yeah.
That's what Congress does is they hit you in the knee and then make you pay for the crutches, right?
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. But just the vapidness of these policy ideas where I'm just like, if you're looking at the state of the U.S. economy today and you think that proposal is an answer, you're an idiot. Like, it's just not. Like, you should literally be incentivizing the opposite. We should be, especially when you look at what's going on in this country, right, in terms of small business is still the biggest employer, right, of people in this country. Government is quickly rising to the top of that list, though. You literally, when you look at this country and you look at the debt situation, you need enhanced productivity, you need all these things. All of those things traditionally have been delivered by small business. You should be incentivizing small business, right?
Especially right now where they're the only ones getting hurt by the policy rate.
Yeah, I swear to God, the Democratic Party and Republicans have a lot to blame in this too. But specifically the Democratic Party at some point became the big business pro-war party. And it is anathema to me. I just don't get it.
I would take this as a ploy. It's just like the steel tariffs that came out the last week. It's just an election move. It's not real policy proposal.
I know. I just don't understand how that helps him. I mean,
go after the rich people. Everyone that's not rich loves that.
I know, but you're already divided on those terms. What I'm saying is that is not going to earn him a single voter. That could possibly lose him some. But we've long said, I feel like the people running his campaign are.
But sometimes it's about getting people out to the polls. So if you start thinking your base is going to sleep on you and you got to go shake them, you know what I mean?
Well, what about if your problem is you're going to sleep on your base? That's more of the issue here. Yeah. Okay. I don't want to get stuck on that, but I just, again, and it's not me trying to beat up on one party or the other. I just looked at that and I went, you think looking at the game today, the board as it sits, you think this is an answer that helps anybody?
Yeah. I mean, hey, at least it would be theoretically, make the deficit smaller, unlike every other policy proposal between the two presidential candidates.
Yeah. I mean, well, the other thing, too, is we need to redefine our brackets, you know, like.
We should redefine everything when it comes to taxes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But I mean, look, $1 million is a lot of money. I'm not saying it's not. All right. I'm not. But let's put this in perspective. What is the average 2,700 square foot home where a family of five would live in it? What is that nationwide? Probably $700,000 to $900,000, maybe like an average price for a house like that. So you're talking about an amount of income that buys the average family home, right? The $1 million ain't what it used to be.
True, but in 1 year in income, it is substantial. I'm not saying
it's not. Yeah. No. I hear you, and it's like
it
I said,
be, that should be like a running 3-year average type thing or something like that. Because you can have 1 year, like you say, like if you in a small business, you can have 1 year, any year that is monstrous. You know.
Yeah. So, well. Yeah. That's the other side of it. Yeah. Yeah. No. It's just.
So again, it would be wonderful for CPAs. That's about it.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is just the fatigue of, and this comes to no surprise to anybody listening to this, but this country is going to continue to have a really tough time finding a rhythm and finding a balanced position and getting back to a stable place culturally and financially without the help of the middle class, but also more importantly, until we get people on Capitol Hill that have done something other than be on Capitol Hill. It's just very evident that the people we have running this country on a political basis have completely no idea what reality on the ground is. You know, it's just that I feel like it's the most obvious observation of the day you're going to hear anywhere. But I just, that reality to me becomes more and more painfully obvious with each day that goes by on both sides. You hear people to say stuff and you're like, good Lord, if you had any, if you had even the smallest amount of education on this matter, you wouldn't have said that because you'd realize what an idiot you sound like.
Yeah. And if you did say something smart, the media is not going to tell anybody about it.
Oh, well, the media wouldn't even know what it was. So, I mean, you know, if you want to find a collection of people that are stupider than the people on Capitol Hill, just go to any media company.
Yeah. They only cover the nuts.
Stupider.
And the craziest things people say. So
I'm criticizing people's intellectual prowess and I'm referring to them as stupider.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
No. All right. What else did we see today? Anything else?
Nothing else today, but tomorrow we'll have GDP for the first quarter. Jobless claims, and then Friday we'll have personal income, personal spending, PCE, as we mentioned, and UMISH, which I don't really care about that. But I'm vaguely interested to see what happens to inflation expectations out of UMISH to see if the longer term stuff creeps up at all.
That'll be interesting to see. Earnings extravaganza continues on this week.
Rest of the week,
I would say by and large, earnings have come in pretty close to what we would have expected. I don't think there's been any real big surprises one way or the other.
Yeah. And if you look at the aggregate numbers, now we're only like, you know, 20, 25% of the way through, but actually below expectations, which really never happens, but they usually start,
give them time to report.
They usually start slow. And then you get through this week and typically you're above expectations, on the revenue side, like actual sales, those coming in a little higher than expectations.
Yeah. Which would, points again to inflation being a little higher.
Nominal GDP is doing good.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I think it keeps pointing back to something we haven't talked about in a while, but just looking around the economy, I just think that inflation is materially understated.
Of note, we're kind of talking about like getting worried that there are some pockets softening up. Hey, financial conditions have tightened up. But if you look at same store retail sales from Redbook, which is a year over year number, growing at 5.3%, so very strong. You know, consumption still, consumers still doing their thing.
It's interesting that number 5.3, just retail sales, right? Like,
yep.
So I'm just a big believer that the actual inflation rate is somewhere closer to 4.5 to 5.5, somewhere in there.
Always depends on how you slice it and cook it up.
But, yeah,
but
no.
There are plenty of prices growing that fast, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, that kind of does it, right? All right. Well, we'll be back tomorrow. We've got more big earnings coming out. What else do we have? Who do we have on tap for the rest of the week that's big? Big in terms of something I don't think that we looked at the map and really saw anything that we thought was that important in terms of giving us insight.
The two like sort of big ones for us have come and gone. I think that's why we probably let go a little here. Naturally, I have to scroll for like a 3 days to find the graphic.
Oh yeah, it's not going to come up easy. I mean, why would it do that?
Man, I send myself a lot of stuff on here. So I have this probably absurd way of doing things where I will DM myself stuff from Twitter that I want to use later. They have like a bookmark function, and here I am direct messaging myself things. But hey, works for me.
Attaboy. What are you looking for right now?
Just what earnings, big earnings we had coming up the next couple of days.
Yeah, I didn't see any that I was particularly that I think really tell you a whole lot.
Yeah, I happen to do it.
I, you know, to me, when you look at the preponderance of tech companies, as long as retail sales numbers hang in there, I expect tech to keep crushing it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there's other factors that impact them, but bottom line, I mean, I think retail sales probably have a pretty good look through to like a Google quarter or an Amazon quarter.
Right. And I think that's why you we're getting some of those. One company does one thing and the other ones are like, oh, that's what I should do. All right. So tomorrow we will have the big ones are going to be Alphabet and Microsoft after the close. But tomorrow we also have like Intel, Snapchat, Roku, Southwest Airlines, Caterpillar, Royal Caribbean. And then Friday we'll have the big oil, Chevron and Exxon. And that's really it for Friday, things at least I care about.
Snapchat. I haven't really looked at that company in a meaningful way in a dog's coon's age.
Yeah, I have
no idea.
Not interested.
No. No, too many other things out there that I think have offered tremendous value and interest. All right, pal. Well, that about does it for today. For the rest of you, appreciate you guys listening in, and join us tomorrow as we keep going down this macroeconomic journey on a daily basis and trying to bring you the highlights and keep you informed. So as always, we'll see you again tomorrow. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.